But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Got Brendan again on a Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Yes, a Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Joined by my wingman, Michael Berlew, once again.
Yes, I am. I'm right here, man. We're on location.
We are on location. We'll get to that in a minute. Berlew, it is only approximately a couple days until December 13th. Do you know what December 13th is?
I got a rough idea. Do you want me to go into details on that answer, or what?
I do.
All right. Well, then I believe that would be the Big Brew Fest in Sussex County and Augusta, New Jersey. We're going to be podcasting live and going on. I'm seeing some interesting things there, and we'll just be podcasting live, have various special guests. Wonderful event with 200 brews, 7 food trucks. Just can't name the amount of things that keep on going on in there, but I can't wait for it, my friend.
Yes, we are. This should be out on the Tuesday or Wednesday before. So if people are still listening, if you enter the promo code shenanigans, you get $10 off your ticket. Okay. Now, prices did go up. They did go up $10 a ticket, but
you
pay regular price if you enter shenanigans. You got designated driver tickets. You got VIP tickets, and you have the normal ticket. 200 brews. I'm distracted by our guests, which is good.
We're trying to be professional here.
Yes.
You know.
How can you start talking about comedy now when we're talking about food and booze?
Yeah. But we will be live podcasting from the Big Brew Festival. It should be a great time. We are getting a hotel. Which means
together.
Yes. We might podcast what goes on in a hotel. But other than
spooning
that,
shenanigans.
Check out bigbrewnewjersey.com. We will be there. And also, we got a lot of great guests coming up. But I would be a jerk if I didn't mention the two guests I'm sitting across from. If you hear some ambient noise in a bar, okay, because it's. We're literally sitting in a bar. We are sitting in the Oak Barrel Pub in West Orange, New Jersey. And sitting across from me is Joe Carney and Rich McDonald. Wow. Now, that might mean something to you, but we're going to get to know them in a minute. Rich is waving to the microphone, so obviously radio is not his forte. I woke up this morning very excited. Not to interview these guys, but very excited for a comedy show. A great comedy show. We are going on in about an hour and a half. It is Rich McDonald, Joe Carney, Kevin Grifo, Rita Chandra. I heard Mr. Watson might be coming around. Is what I heard. Shea Farrell and Kevin Grifo. All-star lineup right there.
That's a hell of a lineup.
All-star lineup.
Scott Brennan's getting scratched. Oh.
Yes. Oh. I've now been bumped to a minute. I get a minute of time.
You think you can stretch that long?
Well, that's three times longer than what I normally do.
Yeah.
So.
I had a nickel for every time I heard somebody say that.
You have to, really hold out for the, hey, how's everybody doing tonight?
Yes. But across from us is Mr. Rich McDonald, Joe Carney. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Really,
man.
Glad
now,
to be here.
Now, I know you've heard our show worldwide. You know, we had to bump Beyonce and Jay-Z actually to get you guys on. We
it's
actually pushed them off.
They're not funny.
No, they're not funny.
I would.
But Joe and Rich are two comedians from Jersey. If you've seen them, they do something a little different than a lot of us. I guess, whatever you want to call a stand-up comedian. I know you both do stand-up, but you have something interesting. You do more of an improv act, and I know that you are McDonald and Carney McDonald.
Which one? McDonald and Carney.
McDonald
we flipped the coin.
Carney? I was just going to ask you, who got the first hat
and how? McDonald sounds good, but McDonald and Carney is what won on the coin toss, so looks better.
You are a Jets fan, so you're used to losing in everything.
Exactly right.
So, but
well, with every great duo, it goes the good-looking guy, and then the other guy.
Right. Yes. So, Abbott was very sexy versus Costello. So,
if you think about it, thank you. Yeah.
Now,
Martin and Lewis.
So it's McDonald and the other guy.
Now, I know Rich casually just through mics and communicating with him on Facebook. Joe, I've gotten to know a little bit better. First up through the Johnny Watson show, which me, Berlew, and Joe are part of. Now, you may not know
Johnny Watson Experience.
Maybe we should change the name, like a Jimi Hendrix album.
That's not a bad idea.
We'll
redo it again.
Now, you may not have known you've heard Joe. You may not have known, because Joe plays many different characters, okay? If you watch the relaunch, Joe performed as Jesus.
H. Christ, King of the Jews.
Yeah. King of
Reigning
the
champ.
Jews.
That was me.
Yeah. Good for you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Long time working on it, but...
Joe has performed as various Muslims and all different types of things.
A lot of ethnicities and sexual preferences.
I mean,
but not Eskimos, as we talked about before the show.
Not Eskimos. And Joe, you know, Joe's been, I'm trying to incorporate Joe more. I'm trying to talk in Watson's ear, you know, like, let's bring Carney on more and more and more and get rid of Doug Max, because...
If we can't bring on Carney, can we just at least get rid of Doug Max?
The world would be a better place.
Yeah.
But Joe, we're gonna actually start with you, even though this is Rich's show.
Yes.
We're gonna start with you because you worked with us
billing.
On Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Just sit back and watch this happen. The verbal parmesan is about to flow.
Oh, verbal parmesan. That could be for my Italian audience.
That is
shenanigans
what I call
for the Irish audience.
Yeah, we are pretty
parmesan.
Big in Europe. So.
Verbal matzah for the Jewish audience.
Make sure you do it before sundown. Go ahead.
Joe, first off, I don't like to make it straight interviews, but how did you, when did you start comedy? Like, and what got you into it and things like that?
I actually started about 18 years ago, opened up for my buddy's band down in the Jersey Shore, down at bars and local clubs in Long Beach Island. I started opening for a band called King Richard, which was a euphemism. Which is like a euphemism.
Yeah, I get it.
For, you know, King Richard, Big Richard, Big, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yep, so that's where I started.
Where's
doing
he going with this?
You'll get it. It's a joke.
So you eventually teamed up a guy named Richard, too.
Exactly. It was destiny. Yeah, destiny. Yeah.
So what you're saying is you love Richard.
Exactly.
All over your face.
I love to be surrounded by Richard. Wow, I didn't realize that, but
Richard,
this is so true. I'm going to go to bed realizing I'm starting and ending my career with Richard, Big Richard.
Yep. Good for you.
Yep. It's amazing. I never even put that together.
He's
thank
had
you
the
for
greatest
my
career
world
of all time, if that is the case.
Thank you for bringing my world back around. And then, I started stand-up. I started bombing down the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. Went around bombing for bands down the Jersey Shore.
Bombing for bands.
A couple
sounds
ski
like a charity.
And, bombing for bands. And then I was what would you call a hack. I was literally just taking
Doug
old
Max.
Jokes.
No.
Doug Max, correct.
Yes.
I was taking old jokes and turning them into stand-up, and it just wasn't working. I met my wife. We got married. We had kids, and I put it on the back burner for a couple of years, and my wife said to me,
"You're married?"
I'm married. Everything comes out in this show. Mm-hmm. My wife said to me, "If you can't take a crazy Irish Italian mother, the fact that you've held every job on the face of the earth, you're a plumber and you have two kids, if you can't make that funny, it's time to hang them up."
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I reinvented myself and started back up full time, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago.
She was saying, "Hang it up."
I think that is really what she meant.
Yeah.
It was just a nice way
she
of saying it.
She got very
and
pissed off. No, you still don't
she
get
said,
it.
No,
she's
you
like,
can't
kill
make
the
this
dream.
Hang it up, Joe.
Hang it up.
Like,
yeah.
Get some more freelance plumbing work.
That's
you
right.
Know?
Yeah. And then I met up with Sean Penn, and I worked over in Haiti for a long period of time. That's not true.
Yeah.
I just needed something a little bit
for
more
for a second, like, I had to look at him and go,
I know you bought it.
But, so you're... Do you consider yourself... Now, we're going to get to the two of you together.
Oh, that's a good way.
Yeah. Now, do you consider yourself more of a stand-up comedian an improv comedian, or does it the
an
lines?
Improv comic.
An improv comic.
I love stand up, and appreciate the craft, and I love working at it and making it better. To be an improv comic is there's no high for me better or greater than creating something literally on the spot based on what people are saying to you in the audience. And it's different because we're doing short form, which people don't understand is very much like Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Right.
When people are improv, they're thinking long form and, you know, yell out one word like asparagus and go on for 45 minutes. And
that's actually my act, you will see tonight.
Asparagus?
I just yell asparagus for 3 minutes and then I get booed off the stage.
Wow.
That's
a great idea.
It's tremendous.
You got something there.
So, before we get to Rich, your stand-up, how would you, like, if you said to someone, what do I talk about, what is, like, my kind of point of view? I know it's, like,
what's
a hard question.
That's what people always say.
Shtick.
What's your shtick?
I hate
what
that
do? What's your
you're a comedian. Tell me a joke.
Oh, I love doing that.
Well,
you're, an accountant. Do my taxes.
You're a
and
plumber.
They never
show
laugh,
me a wrench.
It's rare that
you know?
They're, yeah.
No. So what would you say? Family stuff?
Absolutely, 100% about growing up with a crazy Irish-Italian mother and translating that into being the father that I am and how similar yet different I am from my mother to raising my kids, from being a child to raising children.
That's great. Now, we met through the Watson Show. How did you hook up with our boy, Johnny Watson, here?
Johnny Watson did a show for Big Rich about a year and a half ago. I think, as a matter of fact, it might have been Egan's across the way. One of the shows Rich was running.
Or here.
It might have been here.
No, it absolutely was here.
I know he said he did
here
once or twice.
And we just got to talking. What a freaking really nice guy! And you know, he liked my energy. He liked my voices, and he did like my ass. He said something about my ass. Something about an ass.
Juicy.
No, I saw it. The ass. I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty average.
Good.
Average.
The jeans I've been wearing. Plus, I'm wearing Spanx. Very weird situation. You ever wear Spanx? You know what Spanx are?
Have I ever wear Spanx? What I am actually currently, you only see my flannel. I am only wearing Spanx right
First
now.
First time I wore them,
yeah,
I put them on upside
I came
down.
Over here, man.
I couldn't put my arms down for like 3.5 hours. I had no idea that they went on the bottom. I had them on the top, and it looked like I was walking around my arms up for like 3 hours.
Like a sausage casing.
Yeah, it looked like Randy from Christmas Story.
He looked like the Green Man from It's Always
this
Sunny.
This is purely made up. That was improv. Did you see what I did? Hey,
this
that
is
was
why we
sample of the improvisation what? Joe was speaking
so
of earlier.
We are sitting with the
that?
Masters here.
Do you,
how do
they do that?
The way that I met Rich is one of my favorite things to tell.
Well, we're not getting into the two of you yet. It's an individual segment.
We'll get into both.
Come on,
we soon enough.
I'm
in a little
get
while, you're going to get into us. Okay.
In the verbal Parmesan. The verbal Parmesan podcast, we get into people.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
All right, we are going to turn this over to Mr. McDonald, who is too busy texting to interview right now.
Giving directions
to
the big show tonight.
The big show.
Talk to me.
Rich, kind of same thing with you. Before we get into the two of you, how you met, the improv, all that stuff. First off, what got you into comedy? Why? When? All that kind of stuff. We don't try to do long interviews about, like, oh, how do you write jokes? Yeah.
No, basically, just trying to meet women like everybody else.
Okay.
No, 2009, I had a little free time on my hands because my other career, I was working nights for the last 10 years prior, so I could never do comedy. I always wanted to try it. Finally, my work schedule changed. Went out for an improv troupe, which is spoil alert. Where I met Joe. Did that for a few months. Eventually got the courage to get on stage and do stand-up. That was about 2010. And haven't stopped since.
Now you've kind of got a little niche thing going on around here. You get between you have the Starlight, which you...
Starlight's just the open mic.
But it's still,
comics,
you know, still got your name on it. Still got I've done that 2 or 3 times.
Right.
You have... You have the Oak Barrel here, which I guess you do the first
Wednesday every month.
First Wednesday every month. Now, I've heard good things about this show. We'll see after tonight.
We will see. I hear the headliner sucks, but
yes,
should be a good show otherwise.
And you guys also have you have Tyrannies down the road. I know that's not you're not part of Tyrannies, but you have at least like the three you know, three little rooms going on.
The trifecta of comedy in West Orange.
Because I live in Rockaway, and there is literally nothing. Not a thing. Not one thing. I tried to get a room going in Dover. No. The guy can't get it back. Won't get back to me. Nothing. He was so interested. I want to get a room. I want to...
Bash him.
Yeah. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Chuck from Table 42, because I know you're listening to my podcast.
Damn right.
Everybody Why don't you respond to my damn email, biatch?
How dare you?
You could have great comics such as Joe Carney and Michael Berlew and Rich McDonald there.
You had me at Michael Berlew. That's what I know.
I think I'm booked.
So you get into comedy. Now, obviously, just like all of us, you probably bombed your way through everything. I guess not. I mean, by the face you're making. but when did you find yourself? Like, I'm personally, like, my jokes now, I'm starting to like find what I'm talking about. Like, you know, still, like, I did comedy. Like you were saying, you did comedy for a while. Put it on the back burner. I did the same thing, but I did comedy in college and out of college. And I look back on that, I don't even consider that. Like, because I had nothing to talk about. Right. I had nothing to talk about. Now it's like, you know, more work material, family material, things like that. But I did put, I got married, did the house thing, the wedding thing.
You're actually finding who you really are.
Right.
That's what it is.
Yeah, you find how beat down you can possibly get. Absolutely. where those three laughs a night will make you feel better, yep. You know? But what about you? What is your standpoint? Your writing view? What do you talk about a lot?
Well, the first year, I look back, it was all just cheesy dick jokes and things I thought people wanted to hear.
Right.
About a year and a half in, I think I found my character, which is Big Rich from Jersey.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is basically the guy you see after about 9 Jaeger bombs.
Yes.
I can see that.
I put that on stage because that's where I'm most comfortable. In terms of writing style, I'm still growing.
Exploring.
Yeah, because I'm definitely not there yet.
Yeah. Now you run a couple shows. What are the hardships of running it, and what are the benefits of running your own room? Like, why do it?
I wish
pretty much
benefits,
why do it?
Yeah, I wish I was.
Yeah. I mean, when you have Joe Carney opening for you, it's like, ugh.
You made it.
Sex
setting the table. It's called setting the table.
The headaches are plenty. Everything from, like you said, getting a location, getting the place to work with you.
Right.
Because they want it for free. They don't want to help you. You got bad owners. You got bad bartenders. You go to some places, they tell you they're going to turn the TVs off. And you're going to start the show. And
I've been to a few of those.
No, you don't. So what do? Do you not have the show, or you just do a shit show?
Rich and I ran a room together. We were getting national headliners in.
Yep.
National headliners in. We had... Jim Florentine, we had Otto and George.
Wow.
We had the Mick Foley from the WWE. We had Jimmy J.J. Walker. We had
Dynamite.
Police Academy. And we were dealing with owners at that point that would not consider closing down the bar for the $50 worth of beer they were going to make at the bar. They would rather have them yelling and screaming and keeping the hockey game on a show where we have a Jim Florentine who's killing.
Yeah.
And you're trying to fight over, and it's not fair to put together that show and work so hard, and people don't appreciate it. It's terrible.
It's true. I mean, I've been to a few rooms in the recent months where finally I think I see them transitioning to try to put, at least put it in a back room, or where, like, the audience is actually going to watch the comedy instead of the Yankee game that's on. It's not like any other form of entertainment. It's not acoustic music in the background. It's not... poetry, you know, like, where the focus has to be kind of quiet, kind of waiting for delivery.
Attentive,
you know?
You need an attentive audience, you need lighting, you need sound.
Yep.
And it's an intimate art, too.
Right.
Exactly.
You can't be standing 30 feet away from the audience. It just doesn't work.
Right. And that's what I'm like. I'm kind of excited about this room because I love smaller rooms. Like, I'm a nobody, so a small room means, like, one, they're going to hear me. Two, they can't avoid me because I'm right
like
in front of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and laughter's contagious, so that on top of you feeling is the best feeling you can get.
Yet, it's the best medicine. So does it kill anything that's contagious? It's weird, right? Laughter's the best medicine, and it's contagious.
It's also catchy.
Yes. All right. Let's get to the moment you two lovebirds met. Okay. We'll gradually progress into
even interjecting this.
Gradually progress where you are. That was like Wayne's World.
It did not happen that way.
It was planned.
Did not happen that way.
In my head.
Absolutely not. Rich and I joined an improv troupe called On the Spot out of the New Jersey School of Dramatic Arts, which sounds really hoity-toity, but it was a good school. We learned improv. We joined together at the same time, which means together. And
now, before you even go there, like an interesting topic for me is learning improv, because I don't do improv.
Mm-hmm.
I've only messed around with like friends and writing and stuff like that, but never done it like ever on stage. Learning improv, what is that exactly? Like, to me, that sounds like you either got it or you don't, kind
of
thing.
Rules,
but
some people don't realize.
Okay, so give us some of that.
For what Rich and I do for short form and in long form, but it's called Crow. It's your character, your relationship, your objective in the scene that you're doing, and the where, which is where you're portraying this scene. So long as you stick to those and don't step on each other and always agree with each other, yes and is the main rule for improv. Yes and.
If
no matter what Rich is doing or what I'm doing, even though he can see that I'm about to bomb, which is rare, but if I'm about to bomb, to stick with the rules of it, Rich goes with the joke, and I'll do the same for him. So there are rules, and once you learn the rules, then you become your own improv character.
Interesting.
And then you can build yourself so long as you stick to those.
So, like, was it a class or was
it
like?
Yeah, it was a class.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you met each other and, like, love at first sight? Like,
No.
You hated him.
Rich despised everything about me. This is a true story, and he finally admitted it, and you can see it on his face.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a class together.
Right now, Rich is smiling. Like, kind of deviantly.
He does this
like
thing.
Shit-eating grin.
He'll
would be
still
the best
do this
term.
To me. To this day, he'll still do this just to get my goat. Now, we've been, I'd say, there's nobody on earth. The closest friend I have in the world. We've been that way for 6 years. But for 1 year leading up to those 6 years, this is what Rich would do to me every time I perform a scene. Even if I brought the house down, he would wait for it to die and he would go like this. Just this snarky, obnoxious.
I did like the slow clap.
Clap. That would drive me to the roof.
That does fit you, just looking at you.
No matter how much anybody thought I killed, Rich never liked it. Never ever liked it. For about 7 or 8 months of going together, Rich couldn't even talk to me. Despised me.
Wow. This is only half true.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is exactly where you have to cut in and hear Rich's perspective.
No. I only disliked Joe for about a month.
That's not true.
It was a year in his mind.
Yeah, I know. 12 months.
Why doesn't he like me? Yeah, it was one of those weird, just way too similar at first. We're both big personalities. We both take over the scene. But Joe was very good, and I wasn't as good at the time.
Mm, a little jealous?
Yeah. Mm. So I didn't like
you
his
heard it
style.
Here.
I never knew that.
All right, well, it's out there. Can
this
we stop?
This is why we do the interviews. You never know what comes out.
But this is like
Oprah.
I'd say,
sis.
And it was funny because after our first rehearsal together, my girlfriend at the time who was in the room, she turned to me and she goes, "You guys are going to be best friends." Talking about me and Joe.
Wow. That woman's foresight.
And I did it in spite of her.
Yes.
Okay. But then, you know, within a couple months, obviously, we realized we were on the same page. And then...
we had cheesecake and coffee.
Yes, we did at the diner.
You had
really
mozzarella sticks and
it's
a Diet
really
Coke.
Cute.
I had cheesecake and a cup of coffee.
What was he wearing?
what he was always wearing was a half-zipped sweater. Never mind. Anyway. Rich came
Chest
to me and said, I have an idea that we can do together if you're interested.
Okay, so you drop the guard. Okay, you drop the guard. When does it become, holy shit, we click, maybe we can do something with this? When does it happen? Do you this is why I'm so intrigued by improv, because do you practice it kind of, or does it, or do you just go at it?
We started with four of us.
Like a troop.
Because improv's a game structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do things like the dating game, where we take suggestions from the audience, become the characters, and the last person has to guess who we are. Things like that. So we practice the setup of the game, but it's not like you don't know what the audience is going to yell out. So once you're out there, so you really can't practice. Once you know a game, like, I don't think we haven't practiced in 2 years.
And that shows.
but it's like baseball. When you're playing every day, you don't need to practice.
Right.
You know, there's spring training to get loose, and then you play.
That would explain the Mets, then.
So,
Love you too.
We're not allowed to talk Mets on this podcast because it will go off on another half-hour tangent.
Thank you.
That's my team.
Yankees,
we don't need
Cowboys,
it.
Cowboys, Jets. We're just total opposites.
I'm Phillies, so.
And no one cares about you. Yeah, okay,
you don't count.
You have Philly sports don't even count on this podcast.
What?
You're like points on whose
they
lines
don't.
It anyway.
Yeah,
they count when we slap you in the face.
Yeah, but they can.
Points on whose lines? just don't count.
Yeah, you're around the horn points. You don't matter. You're like a white crayon. Nobody uses you.
I heard
this
you.
Is great.
I heard
this is great. Just watch him go.
No.
Aren't you beautiful?
I am. So. Okay, the guard has dropped. You start working together. You said there was four of you.
Yeah, we were dumb kids in the back when we started. We still perform every once in a while as dumb kids in the back, but that was our first troupe
now,
together.
Who were the other two? Anyone we know?
Ted Wrigley and Shelly Miller.
We had a hot girl.
And then we dropped
guy.
Her and got a hot
You're
girl.
Not that hot, Rich. You're not that hot.
And you didn't keep the hot girl.
No, then we got another hot girl.
Okay.
But now it's just down to Joe and I, so we take turns.
Okay.
On the hot girl?
Being
yeah,
hot
whatever.
Girl.
So... Let's fast forward a little bit. You guys are starting to do things. I'm friends with you on Facebook.
But now we're real friends. So
now we're real friends.
We're
real
not.
Friends. So now I'm going to join the group as the hot group, as the hot chick with the beard.
I would. You,
Scott, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I like the beard. Go ahead.
All right.
Hi guys.
You fast forward. Okay. Two questions. Obviously, being an improv group. Or whatever you want to call it, duo has to come with massive failure every once in a while.
He was going to say massive groupies.
No.
I thought he was going to say massive.
The thing they're very
together,
large groupies, like 300 pounds.
When you started, it has to be such a thing that has to grow and get better at. Like, there's no way I could see you guys going out there the first time and just murdering. It has to be this organic growth. Where you're able to read crowds, able to read what doesn't work. Kind of like stand-up, but what's interesting about improv, it's a different thing every night, which is great, but also, like, what do you guys have to fall back on? Like, holy crap, we got to turn this up a little bit.
What separates us from all the other improv groups, because there are duos out there that are phenomenal, but Rich and I, our foundation was based on old vaudeville. We both love Abbott and Costello, Martin and Lewis, yep. Gracie Allen, George Burns. So our games are geared to an audience. We try and bring the audience into our world of combining improv in those old school Rat Pack vaudeville kind of setting. That's our thing.
Yeah, plus our backgrounds in stand-up do make a difference. Just the fact that between a game we can stop and literally do crowd work like you would do at a comedy show.
Right.
And we do it. And we bring audience members on stage, you know, to set them up for a game. And it's like Joe and I take turns doing crowd work, busting on them. We both have that stand-up background. So it's not just improv you're getting at a show.
Okay. So let's talk about the first show. First off, there's a couple of things in my mind. Finding shows as an improv group,
hard.
Very hard, right? Well, actually, you would like this. I put in a word for you with L'Oreal to get you guys as a middle there. Rich is flexing his non-existent bicep.
It's a statement, Scott. It's a statement.
But I said, you know what, let's switch this up. Let's put an improv group in there in the middle somewhere one day and see what happens. And she's like, whatever. But... getting that first show as an improv.
That was anticlimactic, right?
Yeah.
So, well, I'll let you know.
I put in a great word for you, and she said,
"Hell no." So there's a chance.
Maybe a year from now, we'll do an interview, and you'll be like, "That word got us in there."
It was a year from now, I don't think we'll be doing these.
What, podcasts?
So getting that first show as an improv. Just in general, like doing like dive bars and comedy clubs and stuff like that. A lot of times they're like, we have one microphone, you know? Like, you guys, I see you now.
A lot of things. Whenever we get a paid gig, we try to put a couple shekels in our pocket, but then Rich has convinced me to reduce the shekels in the pocket and invest in the show. So we bought lighting, we bought sound, we bought our jawbone microphone so that we can do things hands-free. So we're constantly trying to improve on that, not only the material, but the product that we're presenting to people—a more professional product, a more business-oriented product, a more what separates us from other people besides our
good looks,
yeah, is the fact that
you guys are stunning.
We could right now do a show for a group of 20-somethings, a corporation. We just did Avis. We did an Avis Corporation show. And we could do families. We did kids. We had kids 10 years old on stage with us, and it's the same show. The material may be different that people are yelling out, but the product is the same. And
it's funny.
Good.
As a teacher...
What should little Timmy be doing? Prostitution!
You'd be surprised how many times they tell us, hey, listen, guys, this is a really PG to G crowd. And then the first thing they yell out is, butt plug! We're like, all right, we're going butt plug.
It'd be funny. Like, as a teacher, I see a lot of these assemblies come in and stuff like that. It's literally something to think about. Like, if you could just...
We've done them.
So there you go. Yeah. You got these assemblies and these guys trying to be funny. But the kids... You get a good group of kids, and as long as you're funny, like, the kids love you, you know? Like they something like that is profitable where you don't have to give up your real, you know, the real stuff you want to do, but also make a buck doing what you do. That's why improv is really interesting, because there's so many different ways to look at it, you know? Like, it's not just adult humor. It's not just, like you said, you're doing corporate kind of thing. You could incorporate it so much. You could do like a team building thing where you're getting people on the audience and trying to loosen them up a little bit, like a fun business meeting almost. You know,
our team building, what we did for schools, is team, TEAM, together everyone achieves more. So we're trying to show the kids.
I have a shirt that says that from a field trip.
Really?
You didn't invent that.
No. I know we didn't invent it. I stole it. Most of the stuff we do, we stole. But the fact that kids see that. When we do schools, we'll try and do it with just more than Rich and I, because it's a broader audience.
Yeah,
and we
show
them working together how something can come together, and that's the lesson we try and teach.
Are they generally excited when you do it, or are there
love
a lot
it
of like kids like tentative?
They love it. They love fight it over each other and get on stage.
When you get the first kid who's excited, every other kid wants to be involved. They love it.
Knowing from experience, anytime they ask for a volunteer, you could ask for a volunteer, they don't even know what it's for. It could be for like execution, and they're like, oh,
right,
you know, like. But I'm getting a little away. I want to hear the beginnings of the, you know, McDonald and Carney.
The Loop Lounge in Clifton.
Okay.
We did a thing called Rock and Roll Comedy Show. It was our first show ever. We came up with the idea for Rock and Roll Comedy Show, and what we did is. And it's actually become a pretty big seller when we're presenting this. We open up with two or three comics, stand-up comics, and then Rich and I headline as improv.
Right.
So it's usually an hour and 45 minutes, a two-hour show. That show was a little rough because we were in a rock and roll environment where there were bands getting ready to play, and we learned a lesson on our first night. But it was a great idea, and we just kept working at it. We believed in it.
Yeah, right. We created our, as with like stage time as a stand-up where you book your own shows and you go to places, we really had to do that as improv. So we went to certain places where we knew there was a big stage, knew there was an environment, and we produced our own shows. And it's at a point now where we perform more private shows a year, 2 to 3 times as many than, I don't know, comedy clubs and stuff like that. Everything we do is private, corporate, Boy Scouts, schools.
Is it hard to get into the comedy clubs doing?
Yeah,
improv?
Nobody understands because they all think long form, and I'm not bashing long form improv. I did it. I studied
am.
It. He and I went to the magnet school.
Can you
in Manhattan?
Can you go into long form improv a little bit more? Because like
what
the
it
different,
is, you mean,
yeah, the different, exactly.
Literally, it can be the funniest thing on the face of the earth, or it could be the most drib. For instance, literally, like I said in the beginning of the show, where they will say, can you please yell out the first thing that comes to mind? And like I said, you yell asparagus. So for 45 minutes, a team of different actors and improv actors on stage are going to act out their impressions of what asparagus affects, how it affects their life and things. It can be the most monotonous thing. We've lost a lot of... How many people in New York got up? We were doing clubs in New York, and we said... Rich McDonald, Joe Carney, we're going to do some improv. He literally ran to the door on like 3 different clubs. Like, no. It's like, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Please give us a chance. And we'd have to literally captivate the audience.
And that brings me to a question. Whose Line Is It Anyway? Obviously, it's had several incarnations of it. Are you guys influenced by that show?
Very much. If you look up, this is something I was apprehensive about in the beginning and then realized it's just commonplace. If you look up online improv games,
right,
a list of like 500, 600 games come up, and every improv troupe in the world does it. We just formatted the success, the way they captivate the audience, they talk to the audience and include them. That's the product we wanted to produce, and it worked. You know, therefore, for Whose Line Is It Anyway, we're doing it with two. But that format just works, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. It's definitely unique. So people, a lot of people have never seen it before. And once they're exposed to it and they get the groove of what's going on, I have to, you know, not even bragging, I have to say audiences love it.
Yeah.
You know, stand-up is hit or miss.
And it all based on the audience.
We know.
When you say we've had nights that we bombed, okay, literally it sounds like such a terrible bullshit excuse. We bomb because people in the audience did not participate, did not want to be involved, were shy, reserved, yelled out things that just didn't make sense.
I can see that completely.
But that also makes for nights where he and I kill, because we'll take something that is so abstract and so silly and make it relatable and funny, and those are the nights that he and I personally appreciate it more.
It's a challenge. What is, I mean, seeing what you guys do, the rewarding part has to be that, well, one, it has to be, it's a different show every goddamn night. That has to be the most rewarding thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like, in an hour here, I'm going to go up with my 8 to 10 minutes and do my set. And, you know, you guys get, it's a different beast every night. Yes, as a stand-up, the audience is different every night. And you
format's
can kill.
The same.
Right, the format's the same. You can play with the crowd, all that stuff. But your material is your material. You put your love into it, your passion into it. Is there anything in improv where you actually write at all and have fallbacks, or is it just quick quips and just thinking on?
He and I have not written anything on it.
No.
People suggest sometimes, like there's some of the games that we do that, yes, if we were to write something that was a fallback, we would kill until you came to another show and saw me do it again. You would call bullshit right off the bat, right? You would just call bullshit. They're like, they know what they're going to do. They know what they're going to say. We have people that come to our shows, and every single word that comes out of our mouth is different.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, like, if you go to one show and somebody yells out, like, dog, and then the next show somebody yells out that same word, I mean, is your first instinct to try something
new? He's become great at that. What Rich will do is, oh, that's great, but we had it last show. Or he'll straight up say, that's just not funny. Anybody else?
Yeah.
You know? And he'll...
Yeah, that's smart.
Rich directs the audience.
Yeah, and like for one,
I insult him, he directs him.
Yeah, we work well like that.
Yes.
You know, for one game, we try to ask the audience, give us something on your bucket list, something you always want to do. Everybody yells out skydiving. So you have to say, something like skydiving. And now you get other answers. And, you know, a couple times a year, we end up doing skydiving. And
rim
we try to
rim
to,
of the Grand Canyon was
and it's
the
different.
Latest one we had. It was one of the best ones ever.
Rim to rim.
Rim to rim of the Grand Canyon, someone yelled for their bucket list. And I rim the rim, and Rich and I wound up on a donkey in the middle of the Grand Canyon, and I said, we're coming up on the rim, and I'm behind him on the horse, and he goes, well, you are, and it was just perfect. It was just perfect.
Now, do you guys record every one of your shows?
Not every one.
You should, because like I think like just doing what you do, you look back on this 20, 30 years from now and go, I don't even remember saying that, you know, like...
We don't remember an hour after the show.
Yeah.
Somebody else will remind us, or we'll remind, oh, it was so funny when you said that. I'm like, I did? Oh. Because literally, especially us, we're on stage for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Our shows are 2 hours.
Hour and a half, two hours sometimes.
Literally.
If it's just us, it's an hour and a half, 2 hours. And this stuff, sometimes, especially in improv, you just open your mouth, things come out.
Yeah.
That's why it's hard. Rich and I made it to the finals of the new comic talent down at the Tropicana in Atlantic City.
Right. Okay.
And they gave everybody 5 minutes. And a comic can fine-tune his show and go up there and kill
for
5 minutes.
I was going to say, what do you do improv for 5 minutes?
They couldn't understand it. They didn't get it. It was confusing. They didn't know. They didn't... It was very rough for them to even comprehend what we were trying to do. So we couldn't get past we got to the finals. We made it through 4 rounds.
I feel like improv... You probably can't even get in your sweet spot until about 20 minutes, right? You know, like...
We do games in the beginning that are for the audience to loosen up. They're not fun for us. They're not creative. but it's for you to calm down, put down your guard, and understand that we're just here to have fun. We're going to ask you some questions, and we're going to pick on you. I like to pick on the audience, not in a mean way, but just to bring their guard down and know that I'm a ball buster.
Hey, it's a Richie's silly night. Sweet talk.
Exactly.
Relax, exactly. See what we're doing, and enjoy
us. Smile. Exactly. You know, like, now, how has improv impacted your, both of your stand-ups? That has to freaking kill that nervousness. It has to kill.
You would think.
No?
You would think.
Huh?
It has helped me tremendously to know that I can just go with the flow.
Right.
But I have, for some reason, separated my stand-up and my improv. My brains are completely different because, like you guys do and Rich does for stand-up, I'm not saying you guys are typical to me. When I get up there on stage, it is my act that I want to present. Rather than if I would just let my guard down as much as he can, I'd probably do a lot better at stand-up than I do currently.
Interesting. How about you?
Joe does very well at stand-up. Yeah. Don't listen to Joe. You'll see tonight.
We'll see.
Oh, my God.
It's helped me tremendously.
As bad as I'm going
to
bump.
Like, to me, like, bumper. to me, that's
tremendous. You heard it here first, people.
To me,
come
like, as a relatively, you know, here and there stand-up comedian, now working pretty hard at it, it's like, just now I'm finally hitting that, I don't give a shit, I'm going to deliver my, like, that, like, take, like, I don't have to, like, take a breath anymore before going on and psych myself up and stuff like that. Now it's like, you know, they're either going to like it or, you know, now I'm okay with it. Like, before that, it was devastating. I bombed so bad one night, I called Johnny Watson, and the, like, right after the show, and I was like,
how do you get through it, Johnny? Because you do it all the time. Rich, that's not funny.
Doug Max just showed up. Thanks, Doug. I was legitimately, like, depressed because I had worked all week and fine-tuned and practiced, and you never know. Like, tonight, I can go up on stage and bomb. But now it's okay with me because now I can learn a little bit and take, give and take positives and negatives. But I think, like, that improv thing, I would love to even just try it just to relax.
Do you have somebody who watches your set and can tell you the God's honest truth what works and doesn't work? I have that with him.
Berlow and Watson will literally tell me.
It's a different world when you have someone that says, you realize that you sipped your beer at the punchline and fucked up the whole thing? Well,
What's great about writing with these, I write with Berlow pretty much once a week.
You never told the middle of the joke, Joe. You never told the middle of the joke. I've come off stage like that. I'm like, what happened? He goes, well, the beginning was great. Punchline, you nailed it. Do you realize you never told the middle of the joke?
I walked into the bar, Parcheesi.
That's exactly what I did.
And he has a big smile on his face.
Like, what happened? I'm like, what happened? Dude, that should have killed. It would have. If you told the joke, it would have killed.
I'll write with him. I write with Doug occasionally. I write with Watson, and we've now formed a really tight-knit writing group where it's no holds bar. I don't get it. This doesn't make sense.
That's great.
And you give and take here and there. Of course, you say, yeah, you still want it to be your joke, but people don't realize, like, to get somewhere, it's a team thing. I don't understand it. I'm not telling you that because I don't like your joke. I'm telling you because something confused me. You know what I mean? Like, there's a really nice organic writing process. Right. Like, me and him can sit there, and I'll be like, I don't get it. Or, you know, that line doesn't really work. And it just helps so much. Like, because in your head, everything's fucking great. Yeah. Everything is fucking the most brilliant thing you've ever written.
Totally understand it in my head. And how you don't understand, I don't get it.
Right. Yeah, you're hardest, wrong, not me.
Yeah.
The hardest thing in the world is to understand your jokes are not your children.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You want them to be perfect, but they're not.
Right.
Except your children are perfect, Joe. That's not what I was saying.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't
their
say
their father
Joe,
isn't.
You forgot the middle. You forgot the middle of Little Joe.
He's influenced my kids so much, dude. You guys are getting to know me that I love doing my voices and I love to be characters. So for Halloween, he gave me a flak jacket. I was going to be Bane for Halloween. I wind up not being Bane. So my son sees the mask, right?
You'd be a good Bane.
He goes, Dad, look, I got the voice changer. And I said, oh, no, I don't need it. He goes, yeah, no, Dad. They got the voice changer. I called him immediately. I'm like, what did you do to my kid, man? What did you do to my kid?
All right. What is on the horizon for the McDonald and Carney? What's on the horizon? What's coming up?
Our
what's
favorite
the goal?
Show, one of our favorite shows.
Superstardom?
What?
Superstar. Well, yes. Obviously.
Well, one of the things we didn't talk about, I know just briefly, our improv has brought us, Rich and I acted together in a movie. That went to the Cannes Film Festival. We were in a movie together. In Cannes, literally. Yeah.
The Cannes Film Festival.
Some internet shows, some sketch comedy. So what happens to he and I is we speak every day. What time?
Oh, 3:45.
3:45 every single day. I call him on my way home from
work
every single day in the afternoon.
Well, Watson texts us at 3:45 in the morning.
We have ideas. If we could sit down and go through the pad, there's probably 25 pages of great ideas that we just don't have. We're not surrounded by or not using our resources the way we should to have people who can film and edit and do that, because we don't have that ability. Until right now, when Scott pointed out,
you know somebody good?
Scott knows somebody.
Yeah. Porn director, but he's
good.
That's
fine.
He's good.
It's his dream. But we...
I do all this.
It's just a matter of... We have another guy that we travel with. We do a lot of work with, Natty Bumper Car. I don't know if you guys have ever seen him.
Great
guy.
Comedian.
Love him to death. Phenomenal animator.
Ask Berlo. I just literally said, on the way here, I said, I know Rich is like tight with these guys. I said, have you ever seen Natty? Like, literally on the way here. And he's like, yeah. I said, that guy sticks to his guns and is determined to do his thing. It's so awesome.
He loves us. He'll do anything for us, and he's a great partner / associate to have. Like, when he listens to this, if I say the wrong thing, he's going to cry. So I love Natty. We both love Natty. Yeah. He will.
He's a good cuddler.
He's a great cuddler. He'll do anything for us, and he is one of the most talented brains.
Yes.
It's a matter of getting all of these people, all of this talent we're surrounded by, at one spot doing one common goal. But I guess that's the problem with every
but you know
show
what?
That people
like the
do.
Whole thing is also it's just a thing of support. Like, you go into so many of these rooms and people just want to bash people. To me, it's like supporting people is one of my favorite things. Like, just getting a community together where, like, yeah, you bombed. No big deal. Here's what worked. Here's what didn't. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe you could tweak this. Never make it here. I'm raising my hand now because people...
You're doing the levels of something. You never make it here alone.
Like, because you can do a lot of things, but you have people around you that can do things for you better. It's never a solo effort. It's never a solo effort.
Anybody who thinks it's a solo effort is not going to be successful.
No. And it's about just feeding off each other and helping each other out. That, like, really
a team effort to make me successful.
Right. So,
Before
we go on, we're going to play a little game in a second. What, people want to check you out. People want to see what the hell, you know, what if this podcast brings even one new listener in. Where do we go see you? Where do we check you out? Where do we get information? All that stuff.
DumbKidsInTheBack.com. DumbKidsInTheBack.com. We're also on Facebook / DumbKidsInTheBack. Garden State Comedy.
Garden State Comedy.
That's how I run the shows.
Yep.
You know, the title we gave all the shows. If you just look up McDonald and Carney of Dumb Kids in the Back, Facebook will come up, Twitter will come up. But our website,
Dumb Kid Joe at Dumb Kid Joe on Twitter. You're at Big Rich, right?
Big Rich _Jersey.
Great.
Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna play a little game.
All right, shoot it.
I made this game the other night, but Berlo said to me, "That'd be great if we get Carney and McDonald on."
I said that.
Yes, you did.
Huh? Was I drunk?
So we each took a word. Johnny Watson's here. Johnny Watson's joining us.
Oh, I am. Okay, great.
Come on, you're gonna be riffing right now. Let Johnny sit here, and you guys will just move the microphone over.
Okay,
it's also his microphone.
You know how to do this? It's called a podcast, Johnny Watson.
So, what me and Berlo did the other night...
Johnny Watson just walked in.
Oh, my God. He's glowing. He's amazing. He's so pretty.
Even a guy who doesn't do his hair looks that damn good.
I would.
I came up with the idea.
Me and Berlo. Berlo, will you tell him what we were doing?
Apparently he's supposed to tell you something, Scott.
Oh.
We were
Johnny Watson is here, by the way. Johnny Watson, great comedian on the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
We talked about the Watson show for about an hour.
Yes. Well, you did talk about it, really.
We talked a lot. We talked a lot.
That's great. You were terrific, by the way, John. Yes.
I mean that
with the bottom of my heart. Bottom of my heart.
All right, go ahead. We're going to play a little game, and we're going to go around doing it.
Right.
You were saying...
I was saying that being Burlow, driving... Where are we driving from, B?
Probably somewhere in Pennsylvania.
You don't remember what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to remember.
Like, when we were doing the improv thing. When I took the thing for 40 minutes.
Oh, I know what...
Johnny Watson came to show me up. Is this what's happening?
What happens. He comes in with his angel wings.
I'm just so not, happy to
no,
see him.
Not at all. I don't even know what you're doing, but I just know you guys were doing an improv thing, and that's one thing I always try to...
Here's what we did the other day. Me and Burlow were driving with Tina Marie, another part of the Watson cast. We took a topic. Right. Like, I would say a topic. I would say frogs.
Right.
And you would do a minute on anything that reminded you about frogs. Burlow would do a minute, blah, blah, blah. And it just went really well. We actually had some funny material. We bombed like 20 times in the middle. So what are we going to do?
No offense, but that's lesson one at the comedy class.
Yeah. Well, I didn't take the comedy class.
No, I know you didn't. I'm just saying. Yeah.
But anyway, Johnny Watson is here. Johnny Watson's performing tonight.
Yes.
Not that this will matter because this will go up a week and a half from now.
Right.
But
hurry up down here.
Johnny Watson is the guy we are all on the Johnny Watson show with. It is growing. This podcast is like a support system for it. We're just trying to pump it out, get exposure. So we're going to play a little game.
All right.
I'm going to pick a topic first. You have exactly... We're going to... Just to keep it trim, because I have two news stories to go through. You have 45 seconds to just talk about what that thing everybody brings to your head.
Free flow? And like rapping, kind of?
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Free flow. Okay.
So
this is your battle this rap. Is your no. forte.
This is his this forte, is so that's why you were going God. First.
Guys, this is it. Yeah.
Stop looking at me.
Ready?
I'm going first.
The word is beards.
Beards. Okay. One of the things that I'm apprehensive about the fact that I have a beard is that it has become synonymous with the Boston Red Sox. And if anybody knows me, there's one thing I hate more in the world is the Boston Red Sox. I can't stand them. So I grew this beard thinking I'm going to be considered one of the idiots, and I'm not. As you can see, I have my Yankee hat on with the two on the side. I absolutely love the Yankees. I love my beard. Now, one of the reasons I grew my beard, Boston Red Sox aside, is that I have what's called a carny chin. My father has it, and unfortunately, my sister has
it.
And the beard actually disguises the fact that I have a gobble neck, a little bit. I put that on, and now I have gray on the side, gray in the middle.
But you're like Brett Favre, you're cool.
A little bit, and then I stand in front of the mirror with my beard, and I pretend that it's 300.
Johnny wants beautiful. Beards.
Well, let me tell you, a lot of times I'm called a beard, because a lot of people think I'm gay. So I date women just so they you know, I don't show my gayness.
You cover it up.
I cover it up. I actually can't grow a beard. I've tried
nothing grows
four
on
times,
steel.
And my mother often was that. I'm sorry. What's that?
I said nothing grows on steel, buddy.
Oh, wow! I didn't take it as a compliment. Thank you very much. Now my mother, for example, my brother has a beard, and my mother blames the fact that he has a beard because I'm steroids. Because my brother's on steroids, and my mother wants me to go on steroids. She's like, why don't you be like your brother? Get out the steroids. Get out the juice. I said, Mom, steroids make you angry and violent. She's like, shut up before I slap your face.
All right. I grew a beard for two reasons. One reason I grew a beard is because I know I do it in my yank, but I am self-conscious of my underbite.
So are you really?
I am. I am. I don't know.
You mentioned I still don't notice it.
I never had any problem with it. I grew it.
I never noticed.
I grew it, and it helps me cover up this... you know, this humongous Irish chin, you know, like, so I definitely grew it for that. And the second reason is I'm extremely lazy. Okay. I hate shaving.
Right.
I absolutely hate shaving. I used to do it all the time. And like, I grow a lot here, which I'm pointing to the middle of my face.
Right.
But here is like more of like, it takes a work of art.
Right.
So, you know, I started the goatee, and then I thought I looked a little bit like white trash for a while, and I just let it grow in. And that's my story with beards. Berlu.
I always wanted to grow a beard. My dad had a nice beard. It wasn't like full out like ZZ Top, but it was full in. And all my life I've tried to like grow something, and I keep on getting patches on my body, and I get patches on the side of the cheek, side of the chin, and I notice it actually starts growing up the side of my cheek in a way that doesn't make sense. Like, you never see like a good beard go up a cheek. And it's just so sad, you know, because I try to grow it out, and it always just looks like a freaking bird's nest trying to grow there, and like people are like,
Doug Max called him Yasser Arafat.
Yasser Arafat. Yeah. Doug Max did.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. That was round one. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Joe McDonald and Rich McDonald.
All right.
We have lost McDonald.
We have lost Rich. But we gained a Watson.
We gained a Watson.
We gained a Watson.
He's out there talking to the ladies.
Who would like to come up with the word next? I came up with the first one, so someone can go next.
Can I come up with it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Ready?
And who Sicilian.
Wow. Okay, Johnny, you're up first.
I'm up first.
You're next to him.
Wow.
Go.
Unbelievable. Believe it or not, I am Italian. My family is Sicilian. And but I look Chinese, because when I was in my mother's womb, she was smoking and drinking, so I just squint down there. Now I am a big fan of
loop it.
I do like
going
Richard
to Rich Mack. Next.
Back. Richard Mack, yeah. I am not a big fan of Sicilians. I'll be honest with you, because you know you have the north with the south and the northern Italians, right? The Southerns are the Sicilians. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
And to me, They're like the greasier, the less attractive. Where the northern, you look like, you know, the right by the Alps, very, very European, very, and they speak different languages.
Rich McDonald, you're back. Sorry, you're an improv comedian. The word is Sicilian. Give us 45 seconds on Sicilian.
Sicilian.
The greatest slice of Sicilian I have is Nino's in Harrison. Absolutely delicious. The way they cook it, they don't put the mozzarella cheese on top. They drizzle a little bit on, then put the sauce on top of that. But the key to this deliciousness is olive oil.
Really?
They put olive oil underneath. The witches are cute down there, too. Olive oil, and then they drizzle the olive oil on top as well. Now, when I tell you I will stop, no matter what time or day, if I pass that, Mr. Nino's, Sicilian pizza and a hot waitress.
Now, when I think Sicilian, my parents used to, we'd have pizza night Fridays like most white suburban kids, you know, like we have pizza night Friday. And we ordered from the cheapest place possible down the street. It was next to Little Caesars, which tells you a little bit about it. But we would order pizza and be like, you know, this tastes all right, you know, but they'd be like, it's Sicilian, you know, like, turned out it just sucked. It was just shitty pizza. They would say it's Sicilian to try to, like,
make
disguise it and try to make it a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Exotic? Good.
More gooder.
Some appetite.
Yeah.
Appetizing.
So, like almost my parents are trying to convince me that your palate's not developed yet, so eat the shitty pizza, you'll enjoy it one day. Michael Berlin.
Sicilian, I'm probably part Sicilian. I'm probably a bunch of everything. Like, my family, every time I ask, like, what's my family background, we're just basically called European mutts, because we're pretty much made up of every piece of Europe ever. In fact, as interesting as it sounds, my family, our history apparently is that we used to be Buckaloos, who were famous horse thieves in Europe.
Wow.
And basically, as the cops were trying to get in to catch the family, we broke up, and one half became Buckaloos, and one half became Berlus, which is kind of a family story. But oddly enough, last Saturday night, as I was coming off a stage, I got called Michael Buckaloo last night.
Wow.
And then Scott Brennan just jumped on that like a mofo.
Wow, that is...
It's a true
All
story.
Right.
And I'm 1/8 Indian, which I don't get how I got in there.
Are we ready for the last round? Are we ready? Johnny Watson, you pick the word.
Jeez.
Johnny Watson's going to pick the word.
I may have to help you. Okay, the word. Let me think of the word.
Any word that comes to your mind.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. I go first,
sure.
Of course. My church.
Yes.
Yeah, I grew up in a church, always not wanting to go to church, but they used to run a holiday smorgasbord.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my parents saying, oh, the smorgasbord's on Saturday.
Right.
The smorgasbord.
Right.
Now, as a kid,
one, you insert your own definition for smorgasbord. I'm thinking like toys and great food.
Right.
And think the smorgasbord was basically you put your ticket in front of something and you'd be able to win, and then they served pancakes.
That was a smorgasbord.
That was the St. Andrew's Church in Avenel's smorgasbord. There was no other treats but pancakes. Berlu.
I mean, my family had big dinner smorgasbords, if you will, growing up. Like, all the holidays, we used to eat. My dad would put, like, cardboard on the pool table, and we would eat our Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners off of that because we had, like, a big family there. And I was the youngest kid, so we didn't have, like, a little kid's table. They would put me in the corner where the column's right next to it. You know, it was basically called, like, the shitty pool shot. So I couldn't even, like, move my chair. Like, I'm eating Thanksgiving dinner. I have about 3 inches of space. I'm a 6'3" kid, and I can't even, like, grab or pull anything or get out.
Joe Carney.
So some of the things I used to talk about in my stand-up act was the fact that I was the fat kid and everybody picked on me. Mm-hmm. And the word smorgasbord comes to mind because it actually was used as an insult to me when I was a freshman in high school.
Really?
Yeah, I went to Roselle Catholic for a year. I failed out. I was way too smart. They told me that I was making the other kids look stupid. That being said, I wore corduroys that actually sounded like whales mating when I ran.
Uh-huh.
So I was so fat, I would go in for $6, and I would get 2 slices of pizza, a cheesesteak, onion rings, french fries, a half a tuna fish sandwich, and a milkshake. And the principal said to me one day, "Mr. Carney, this is not a smorgasbord."
Johnny Watson, take us out.
I chose the word, and only because it's a very funny sounding word, smorgasbord. To me, it's like
the best word.
It really is because it's a word that kind of transcends our poverty. Because you have rich people saying smorgasbord, then you have poor people saying smorgasbord. But the smorgasbords are totally different between the, like, my family's smorgasbord would be a Steak-ums, a Popeye. My mother would be smoking over an Entenmann's cake. Of course, fish sticks.
That was my birthday cake one year.
Yeah, the fish sticks thing was what we used to shop. We would shop at the supermarket for the clothes, and my mother would be like, "Go get yourself some jeans. They're up there by the fish sticks." I was the only kid that had. I'm the only kid who went to. You know, people had Levi's and Wrangler. I had Mrs. Paul's as my jeans. So watch, you know, goes with great with those jeans, tartar sauce. That's my thing. So yeah, that's it.
All right. This is the end of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Rich McDonald, he's running the show, so he's running around like a maniac. Joe Carney, I'd like to thank you for coming on. Johnny Watson,
thank you. Hey.
Popping on. We will see Michael Berlu, of course.
Of course.
My sidekick here.
Yeah.
Overall, a wonderful podcast. We're getting ready to murder this show, which we're gonna do. Tune in to the Johnny Watson Show every Monday night at 7:30. Come catch the Verbal Shenanigans podcast at the Big Brew Fest, and check out McDonald and Carney on Facebook. Watch their improv videos; they're fucking fantastic.
And we have to get both of them on the show.
Yes, they will come back on. We are already talking to Joe about a bunch of new characters. Over that, we're gonna go have a show now. Keep the wind at your back. Life is funny. Laugh at it. I love you.
Adios. Wow.